Hi, I'm Amanda Borsaldan. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hello, and welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Thursday, September 2nd, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. With me are Times of Israel founding editor David Horovitz and senior analyst Chaviv Retegur. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Jessica.
So today's headlines include the very long-awaited challenge of Israel's fledgling government attempting to pass the state budget in a first reading in the Knesset. And that's happening right now. It's been 3 years since we've had an approved budget. What are the chances they're going to succeed? David, why don't you take a stab at this?
I think Chaviv's the expert. The significance is they have to succeed or the government falls. They've got till November the 4th to pass this budget. And if they don't, the Knesset automatically dissolves and we have new elections. So that's a pretty powerful imperative for a government that we will recall was voted in 60 to 59 with one abstention. In other words, it barely scraped into office with the closest possible majority, and it's going to have a real struggle to get this through.
Chaviv, what are the contentious issues? What are the chances?
As David said, I think that so many of the players have a real deep and profound interest in this thing passing. So I do think that it will pass, and I think everyone thinks that. But what's really fascinating is to try and keep track, and you have to really go into the weeds for this, so apologies to listeners. You have to keep track of what actually is going to pass. This is this enormous bill that is 400 billion shekels, roughly. 400-page arrangements bill is attached to it with some of the most significant reforms in the government in 20 years. And there are huge fights over everything, every shekel, every reform, a lot of stakeholders pulling in many different directions. It's fascinating that the bill has survived so long. It went through the cabinet vote. It went through a special committee of ministers vote. It went through the Knesset Speaker's office, who sort of figured out how to divide it between different committees that will write it up. It has survived a lot of procedure to get to today's first reading, plenum vote. Now, the first plenum vote really matters, even to reforms that over the next month in committees are going to get taken out. Because if you have a first plenum approval of any piece of this budget bill or of any of the reforms that are attached to it, then even if the Knesset dissolves, the next Knesset can put those things voted on in the first reading, it's called Din Retzifut, voted on the first reading of the previous Knesset, right onto the Knesset docket and back into a first vote without going through government votes and without going through, you know, there's a two-week process of the public having able to respond to proposed legislation, and all kinds of procedures get wiped out. So get just canceled and it's fast-tracked to legislation. So all these major reforms that are still in the bill that are probably going to pass today are reforms that even if the Knesset dissolves, will be much easier to advance in the next Knesset. So it's a significant day. It is not the passage of the budget bill. That'll probably happen in a month after a lot of things change in committee. It's probably going to pass. The big question is what's going to be in it going forward.
And what about negotiations that, of course, have been ongoing, are ongoing, obviously, between coalition members? What does that mean, both in terms of the budget, but also in terms of the government itself, of the government coalition?
Well, you know, one of the exciting things for particular kinds of nerds like me, and also for like a lot of people, a lot of Israelis who will be deeply affected by this bill, is how substantive the debate has been. So you have feminist groups and sort of socialist economic groups arguing about, you know, the Treasury wants to raise women's retirement age, which I think now is at 62. Now, you can retire anytime you want in Israel, but at the legal retirement age, your pension becomes tax-free. And so that's a very significant moment. And it's right now at 62, and they want to raise it because women live much longer than they used to. Their retirement age hasn't risen with alongside men's. And that's something that's being fought over. And there's a lot of give and take. The Treasury has promised something like a billion shekels of new entitlement spending, a new kind of welfare spending for elderly, poor women who raising the retirement age would hurt them significantly but it doesn't want to give up on raising the retirement age because there's a huge amount number of middle class working women who should be paying more taxes at 63. You know, so there's this back and forth on so many things. There's a regulatory reform that would pull all the different millions of different regulations. If anyone listening here is a small business owner in Israel, then you know that you have to get fire safety approval for your business. You have to get income tax approval for your business, health code approval for your business, labor ministry rules for your business. There are probably 24 different government agencies you have to constantly be interacting with to run your little restaurant. And the Yamina, one of the big reforms that Yamina wants to advance is this regulatory agency that brings all of that into a single place that you walk into one time a year and do all of your paperwork. And they worry about, you know, figuring out all the different codes with all the different ministries. Meretz doesn't like that reform. Some people are criticizing it as a new layer of regulation instead of canceling other layers of regulation. The agriculture reform, Israeli agriculture is heavily, heavily subsidized and heavily regulated and incredibly expensive and also very high quality and also very local. So there are a lot of competing interests in this regulatory reform and this agriculture reform. We don't know if maybe we want to open all up to imports of cheaper goods from abroad. Would that hurt our food safety in the case of a war? All these big debates. So we saw today that the government regulation of they were going to lift all production limits on eggs. The egg industry in Israel is heavily regulated by the government and heavily protected by the government. And one of the things that this new reform was going to do was lift all those regulations. Egg producers could produce whatever they want. Imports could come in. Egg prices would go down. That's gone. Most of the agricultural reform is still there. We'll still be able to import cheaper agricultural goods from abroad. The egg production reform is completely gone. Eggs will remain protected. So we're seeing a lot of back and forth that will affect our lives as ordinary people across all the hundreds of pages of this bill. That's already happening now. And, you know, just one sentence, you know, we haven't seen a substantive debate about what this country looks like, how this government works, what our economy should look like since 2018. And we're seeing it now. And there's so many things that are now uncorked that were in the pipeline and haven't been able to move because there was no budget bill. So it's exciting. It's interesting. You know, there are a lot of good arguments on both sides. If the bill passes in one form or another, I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. People should have their own views. But the very fact that this process is happening is something that I personally celebrate.
So it's basically a wait and see kind of situation for the moment.
Hello, I'm Ari Lam, the host of Good Faith Effort, the podcast where we show how the values and ideas of the Bible can illuminate the most important conversations in society. Want to hear a major music exec talk about the book of Genesis in hip-hop? Leading venture capitalists on how the book of Isaiah informs their work? Or an Oscar-winning producer reflect on how religion can save the American soul? Well, then subscribe to Good Faith Effort on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and listen in to inspiring conversations you won't hear anywhere else.
David, moving on to you, you are working on a piece, or maybe you've already actually finished writing it, about school, the start of the school year. Everyone's wondering how long that will last. Coronavirus guidelines. What are you going to be telling us in that piece?
The country went back to school yesterday, and it was a calculated risk. An educated decision, I think the Director General of the Health Ministry called it, and I don't think he was deliberately punning. It's a risk. It was welcomed, evidently, because something like 90% of students showed up. So parents and kids obviously wanted to be in school. Set against that, there were 210,000 approximately who were not allowed to go to school because they or their classes were in breach of the very complicated, frameworks and regulations that were put into place. The return to school came as new cases are at record highs in Israel. We had a day this week when there were more new cases than at any point in the pandemic. Deaths are rising. Serious cases are not. It appears, and this is certainly the hope, that as more and more people get the third booster shot, we are beating this current wave. And that's, you know, part of this calculated risk. Time will tell, and it will tell definitively and fairly soon whether this was a mistake. They could have waited another month. Anyone who's looking at their Jewish festival calendar in September will see that there aren't that many work days and school days. So it would have been, you know, half a dozen or so school days that would have been lost. A lot of people, including within government, said wait. The government chose not to. And this is, you know, the philosophy of the new coalition appears to be to keep Israel working in school, sane, as far as possible within this awful, pernicious, unpredictable pandemic. That's a change from the previous government. The previous government, globally, relatively speaking, we were incredibly high in terms of number of lockdown days. This government is trying to avoid this. What's worth noting, I just thought there was a little remark that Naftali Bennett, the Prime Minister, made yesterday morning. So he and the Education Minister went to the first day of school, in a school down south. And Bennett, said something about, you know, we're doing our best here. But there are some things that are bigger than us. You know, we can't predict how COVID's gonna work, but we promise you maximal effort. I just thought the some things are bigger than us was an atypical statement for a politician, and a welcome one, and absolutely spot on and quite encouraging. I mean, there was a process here. It was not perfect. The whole testing procedure and ramp up was somewhat chaotic, to put it mildly. But the combination of actually calculating the risk and speaking to health and education and other professionals, aware that you may not get everything right, you know, and they may have got it wrong, but at least there seems to have been a fairly sensible process and a certain amount of humility. I thought that was a little bit encouraging.
David, I'd also like you to weigh in on a comment that Foreign Minister Yair Lapid made yesterday when he was speaking to reporters. And he spoke about the U.S. decision to pull troops out of Afghanistan and said that it was suggested that it was executed poorly. What does that mean when Israel's foreign minister makes a statement like that?
It either means that he's trying to have a go at the administration that his coalition is courting and seeking to build good relations with, and from talks with which the prime minister has just returned and has been entertained by a president who went out of his way to be gracious amidst the chaos of Afghanistan. So either Lapid, like I say, was trying to, you know, say something he thought was very important, critical of the administration, or far more likely, he would have been better finding a different answer to the question. I mean, he was speaking to the foreign press. He was asked, how concerned are you about what's been going on in Afghanistan and specifically the withdrawal? And he chose to answer the question. And I'm sure he was speaking from the heart. And we should welcome that on one hand. And we should wonder whether it's always the smartest thing when you're the foreign minister and trying to cultivate good relations. And when you're saying something that's not particularly helpful, I don't think that the administration needed Yair Lapid to tell them that there were some disquieting aspects to this withdrawal. You know, we have lots of things to say. I personally have written some of them. I do think this was a debacle. I do think it weakens America's credibility, and that's bad news in this part of the world. For Israel, for America's allies, I think it's worrying for America because, you know, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and we know starkly, you couldn't know it more utterly than 9/11 showed, that if you take your eye off the ball, or if you're not engaged in this part of the world, the dark forces will be emboldened, and the dark forces, you know, they loathe Israel, but they really, really loathe the United States. You know, we're just the little Satan, according to Iran. America is the great Satan. And therefore, it's terribly troubling, but perhaps, Lapid didn't add a great deal to the wisdom on this matter and might, in retrospect, have, found a more sensitive answer.
You know, it just occurs to me, he first rose to prominence as a very popular columnist in Yediot. And his answer was just like, you know, one of his columns, where you kind of get the feeling that he was saying, his point was, I really understand why Biden would do this. I mean, 20 years, $2 trillion, I get why Biden would pull out. Maybe he should have done it better, you know? It's like a classic Yair Lapid column, but he doesn't remember sometimes that he's no longer a columnist, he's now like a foreign minister. Like it's something that you see with him a lot, I think.
Look, you know, we shouldn't be complaining because I'm sure he spoke from the gut. That's what he thinks. So, you know, maybe we should not be criticizing him. But I suspect that he himself would rather have answered the question a little differently in retrospect while still being honest to himself.
He might have gone home last night and said that was a gaffe. Or maybe not. In any case, thanks to both of you for being here today on the Daily Briefing. We are wishing everyone a good weekend and hope to hear from you soon as we continue the Daily Briefing next week.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica. Be well. Shabbat shalom.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raul Whitliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.